Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 241. Tonight's show is brought to you by cheaters. That'll make sense when we're going through what we're going through later.
All right, I hope.
I literally just looked at the tabs of things I have open. I decided cheater. But yeah, I haven't really done... Actually, I did some stuff. So Friday, good buddy Hannah came by and turned her Yeti Arc, the OG carbon one, into a single speed, which was pretty hilarious. And it was old enough that it had 785 brakes on it. And she's like,
Does it have quick release?
No, it's two axle. It's fancy. But she's like, I think these brakes need to be bled. And I was like, these brakes need to go in the track.
Were they in the lever?
They were like, it was so bad it had like dripped on the top cap of the fork.
Ooh.
Isn't it funny how every single one of those old Shimano brakes, they all fail in exactly the same way? There's no problem. There's no problem. There's nothing.
Nope. Hey, man.
No problem.
Consistency's key, man.
Never seen it before. But every single 10-year-old bike that comes in the shop with Shimano brakes on it, they're all just weeping out of the master cylinder.
I mean, do we want to talk about elixirs then?
Well, yeah, those don't leak. They just don't work. So, like, I guess it's same thing.
What about those haze brakes from, like, 2007?
Well, those will be working. Those haze brakes, the Haze 9 from 2003, those things still work great.
Yeah, you can just open them and pour any fluid into them. Like, you could fill it up with, like, Tri-Flow.
Like,
and
fucking hot sauce. Like, pour some Frank's Red Hot in there. It's like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
We ball.
We stop. Fuck it. We stop. No, don't put Frank's Hot Sauce in or Tri-Flow. But, so, set that up single speed and put some G2s on it. I had a customer wanted to move from his level 4 pistons to XGRs. And he was like, it was this weird thing where I don't remember exactly what happened, but like he gave them to my coworker, and I brought in a pair of XTR pedals for my coworker that day. And he's like, he said I could have those pedals. How about you have these brakes? So that worked out well. And I've just been meaning to put those on my bike. So I was like, all right, fine. You get the old G2s here. And that was cool. Then we road trials. No, and then I did the fork on her full suspension bike because it had quit doing fork things. It was forking around. And then we...
What's her full suspension bike?
It doesn't matter.
All right.
It's a Revel Ranger. I just didn't want to talk about them on the show.
I mean...
Because I'm petty mayonnaise.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's a Ranger. Whatever. Fuck it. The seat tube is 3 degrees. Anyways, not my bike, not my problem. But the fork wasn't doing fork things, so we made it do forks. And then we rode trials bikes a little bit. And then, I don't know, Saturday I worked on the goat barn. And then Saturday I didn't. I don't remember. And then, I don't know, I rebuilt my grinder stand because I didn't like it and painted it. And then I kind of finished up some, so Hannah bought a new house recently, her first house recently, and went over there. It's like south of the Springs a little bit, and went over there, and we built a loop that's like, navigates the edge of her property, and now you can ride dirt bikes or trials bikes. And so that was cool. I rode that in on the big bike. Her husband is a newer trials rider, so we talked, and it was like, look, if we build this on our big bikes, then Josh can easily ride it on his trials bike. He's like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, then anything that you do in the future, you know, once the loop's established, you can just go out and be like, okay, like 20 yards off the trail there's this cool rock, so I'm gonna cut a way to get over there and ride this rock and like get back to the main trail. It's just like the foundation. So that was a lot of fun. Then finished up some things on the big garage project and worked on the Jeep a little bit. And we don't have a garage, we have a shop. Cars don't fit in there.
It's good.
It's all right. And then today I went back to work, so that's all I got. Kenny, you ready to start talking, or you have a mouthful of bread?
No. It's my turn?
It's as is tradition.
Okay. Excellent. I was just waiting for you to officially hand it off.
I mean, you're going to start talking, and then Matt's going to be like, oh, wait, one more thing.
Anyway.
As is tradition.
I rode some moto. I went to a place near Goblin Valley, a little bit north of Goblin Valley. I don't know what it's actually called, like what the area is called. It's a part of the Swell recreational. I've just been doing some more exploring. So I just went out solo, brought all the camp stuff, went down Saturday pretty early and got a ride in. And I was kind of poking around the 5 miles of hell area. I think that's a fairly well-known dirt bike area. So I rode a portion of that and just did some other exploring. Got into a really, really far away place. And there was only one way out. And I could have backtracked all the way, but it would have been like a 20-mile backtrack. So I ended up having to kind of like walk the bike through a sketchy part that I wasn't willing to just send because the consequences were pretty high if you fell off this cliff thing. So anyway, did that and made it back to camp. Made a nice little fire, just kind of hung out. Really cool camp spot. There's nobody in this area at all. This camp spot could support like an entire gaggle of people. You could have like 30 campers there. It's insane. But really cool little secluded spot. Yeah. And then woke up and rode more of that same area. So poked further into 5 miles of hell from a different side and, you know, dropped down and rode, I don't know, a mile or two of it or something like that. I don't know exactly how much, but it gets real gnarly for sure.
Do you think you could ride it?
Do I think I could ride it? No. I mean, I can ride portions of it. Like the biggest crux sections I wouldn't be able to clear.
But I haven't
ridden the whole thing. I mean, I'd have a better chance on the Ultra B, but even so, like it takes a pretty high level rider to like confidently clear it and not have somebody like assist pulling your bike up a thing, for example. Like actually doing it.
Okay, let me back up. Would you go out with a group with the intention of just making it through?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be okay with that probably because, yeah, you could get help and like, yeah, if you fell or this or that or whatever, somebody maybe would catch you or your motorcycle kind of or whatever. But going full solo, the bigger thing, I'm not that worried about me wadding myself up that much because, again, unless you just do something really, really stupid.
It's all low speed,
yeah, you would
high
break,
consequence.
Like, could you break an ankle because you got to hop off backwards and there's like nothing behind you? You know, could you blow, you know, an ACL out or something because you land flat on your foot?
Or like pop your shoulder, do your wrist, you know, you're probably not going to like.
But you're not going to have like a, you know, full on like concussion, yard sale crash. It's very unlikely to have that kind of stuff happen. What I'm worried about is it's hot outside.
Disabling the bike.
I'm in the middle of nowhere. You lay your bike down in a bad spot and you rip a radiator off, which is very easy to do. And then you're fucked. Like you're destination fucked. So I didn't want that to be me. So I was trying to be cautious, but I don't know. I was feeling better. Like I'm getting a little bit better at doing, I don't even know what you call it. I'm going to call it like foot plant climbing where you can like, I'll be 1 foot on a rock to my side and then, you know, kind of clutch it up, get some good traction, like kind of almost seat bounce for a sec, but right back on the pegs, doing just that kind of stuff a little bit more than I have in the past. So I was feeling a little bit better and I cleared some decent stuff. But I did, unfortunately, as I was going deeper and deeper down this trail, you got to make that decision, especially when you're solo. And I've talked about this a million times. I kind of enjoy that because you control your destiny. You can get yourself into a situation that you might not be able to get out of or not get out of easily. I mean, shit, you might have to like, I don't know, maybe you got to stash the bike there literally and like walk out. I don't know. But I did get myself into a situation where I saw a line down a section, and now I am getting into the situation where I can descend myself down into stuff that you cannot get back up. And I kind of did that. I found a line. I saw multiple lines. There's like an insanely chunky right line, and that left line had a couple of slate rocks, and they were steep, but seemed to be abundant traction. Like I kind of eyeballed them. But I didn't realize at the bottom, it was like a 3 or 4 foot drop, which is no problem on the dirt bike. Like you just barely give it some gas, lean back, like that thing will eat. It's not a problem. And I dropped down this thing. And then like I turned back around and looked at what I dropped down. And I was like, oh shit, there's actually, that is like almost one of the only lines back up. So I didn't really think about it that much. And I'm like, ah shit, well, I'm just going to keep going. So I kept going and I got to like a super cruxy section. And I'm like, okay, I officially need to stop. I need to turn around. Because I'm going to get myself into trouble. So I turned around and getting back up, that was gnarly. So I wasn't able to go down that drop section. I was able to very, very slowly work my way up another section. Yeah. Anyway, it was a good time. So it was fun. Cool area for sure. Very high level trail. Not surprisingly enough, I think they say it's like the, why? Hold on. Sorry. Someone has texted me 47 times. I want to make sure someone's not. Okay. Yeah. That's not important. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. I did find a way back up. Rode some other stuff, did some more exploring, but yeah, it was just a good weekend. Did some camping, rode some moto. The Husky is incredibly capable, but that trail is, it's really gnarly. I think there's a reason why it's like supposedly one of the most difficult moto trails out there. At least that's like, you know, recognized and sanctioned, not just some random hard enduro line up, some random thing that two people have done. But yeah, pretty neato. I think that's all I've got. Did anything happen on that trip? No, I don't think so. That was it.
All right, Dan.
I guess it's my turn.
Yep.
For 3 days. That was cool. Just normal bike shop on some old bikes and some new bikes. Nothing really too out of the ordinary, except I did to have like one of those greatest, like, I don't know, older Trek hybrid. And it had a rattle. And she didn't really, she'd bought it. The guy had mentioned something about a bike rattle. We kept shaking the bike and we'd hear a rattle and like the water bottle wasn't that. And I'd hold on to like the rear quick release and it wasn't that. And eventually figured out that the bike had cut suspension at some point and left the bottom tube in the seat tube, pushed it down on top of the bottom bracket, not suspension.
Heck yeah.
And shake it far enough, turn the bike up, shook it, tube inside of the, kind of the top of the, and it was stuck in. Like, you couldn't just like stick a finger in there and try to like pull it out and twist it out. And so we, Rafael Velo, had one of the stem, like an expander. It's for a quill stem that has single bolt clamp for like an old, I don't know, whatever.
Single bolt handlebar clamp.
Yeah, handlebar clamp. And he had one of those, but it was all the like grip on the inside of the post, whatever, jammed down in there, the tube. And so I ended up, I wrapped it, some rolled up Gorilla, like I took a strip of Gorilla tape and rolled it up into like a tube, basically, and wrapped it around that expander, which basically inside of, you can imagine like pliers, except when it opens the working.
It would be like external snap ring pliers.
Yeah, like I wrapped, rolled up Gorilla side out, got it to just, it took a few tries to just the right side. I got it, used it hard enough that I was able to half of it out. I like doing most bike mechanic stuff, but when I get to an e-bike route, last time on the map, and rode a connector 4x4, and I was riding up, God, this is really awful, and I hope that I can, and the thing that gets the whole way up, there was one moto trail, and it was probably a few days, like, I'm either going to find like a one-way, there's nothing at the end of it, I'm either going to find a trail, or I'm going to find like a crashed motorcycle and a dead person. But thankfully, got to the top, and sure enough, the faint single track with Karen right, and there were some big rock moves that I just, my bike over. Yeah, it was, like, I found the trail that I thought might be tough, but it was a good trail. So whoever has been doing some work out there has done some very good
work. Thanks, Forest Service.
Yeah, definitely Forest Service. I think they're getting ready to put, you know, I'm sure that's going to be on the map here in a year or two. Totally legitimate, totally legal. yeah, so that was cool. And other than that, I helped Matt work on the goat barn one day. And today I had, I've got a bunch of, just from people giving me plants. It's kind of funny. Like, I don't know if it's, I've never experienced this in Memphis, but here in Colorado, for whatever, like a very popular housewarming gift is a plant, like an indoor plant, like a succulent usually, or a cactus. And so half of our table that we record on is covered in succulents and cacti right now. And today I had to repot some that's grown. Great thing about succulents is if you kill all other houseplants for whatever reason, like succulents and cactus, like they kind of thrive on neglect. So the less you do for as far as like watering and fertilizing and stuff, the more they tend to thrive. So all of mine are doing really well to repot the cactus. We're here doing some art. It's got some waxed.
Don't you worry about why I might weld in my bathroom.
Why you what?
Might weld.
Why do the arts and crafts you're doing?
It lives rent like on some. It's really funny. He's making fun of like the Orange County chopper of like car stones.
Is he that machinist guy on YouTube? This old Tony?
No, Tony Angelo Motor Trend.
Okay.
But one is like, yeah, I got 240 in my bathroom, and then he makes a joke. He's like, so you know, I could weld in my bathroom if I wanted to. They're like, yeah, but why would you want to weld in your bathroom? He's like, don't you worry about why I might.
Why would you weld in your...
He has 240 in his bathroom because he has baseboard. Okay. And I'm sure that they were working on that. Your baseboard, in theory, their bathroom.
You know what's a bummer? Funny. Is most Europeans have 240 throughout their whole house. It makes way more sense.
They also have healthcare. should we talk about new shit?
Yeah, we should talk.
32-inch wheels, one unbound XL.
Someone on a 32-inch wheel bike.
Nope, 32-inch wheels
unbound XL.
Nope, sell your 29ers.
But also, that's the XL. Like, isn't the XL kind of an outlier? The really fast people don't ride the XL, correct?
Because there's...
I mean, it's not a dig. I'm not saying that what they did is easy. Clearly, it's a longer thing, but it's a more...
Is it 300?
It's not the normal race.
No, it's not.
Okay, just checking.
No, I think the whole thing, and I don't remember the winning time from this year, but like, I mean, I know this year.
I'm trying to remember what I did it in. It was like 30.
Where I'm going, though, is like, if you're a road you can just do like, as silly as that sounds, like, they don't have to train for the two.
Like, they're already trained for that amount of riding a bike.
It's probably a little bit of a stretch. Yeah. Like, they don't do 10-hour stages. Even, like, a big, like, Paris-Roubaix or something, six. Because, you know, it's even with the cobbled section, there's still a
movement. So, I mean, it sounds that's double. Even the fastest people finishing the 200, that's still double your average road stage, correct?
I would say so, but, like, I mean, think about it. Like, it's...
I mean, I can give you, like, sort of first-hand experience. When I did the 200, I was in, I don't know, mediocre road pro shape, and I didn't really have to do X training in order to do the 200, because I was already doing, you know, like, if you're type of you're occasionally doing, like, maybe once a week or every other week, your bike, and you ride fucking all day, you just go out and just ride, not really hard, but like, you have that just base fitness level, and then you're also training like the top end stuff, so that when you're riding at that kind of base mile, kind of non-whatever, like, aerobic effort, not, you know, like an anaerobic effort, like, when you do have to, like, punch up a little hill or something like that, like, you have the fitness so that that doesn't take a lot out of your tank. You know, that doesn't just blow you up if you have to go anaerobic for, like, a couple of minutes or ride in a pace line at, like, ride at threshold or something. Like, you've trained to do that kind of, and you're ready for that kind of... So, yeah, I mean, that's right. Like, you don't have to do extra shit. Like, really, you don't have to change your training a whole lot if you are a pro level, even a mediocre pro level road cyclist, as I was at some point. Very mediocre.
So, the women last year finished in 10 hours and 3 minutes. This year... The women did 10 hours and 31 minutes, so I would say the mud didn't make it.
Fuck, my time wasn't even in the top 5.
Your time wasn't in the top 50 now.
Fuck.
So, and then, let's see, Mads won in 9:14 this year, and so...
I love seeing that, though, because it's just, it goes to show, like, how many more women are competing at that level, and I really like seeing. It makes me feel a little bit warm and fuzzy, and that there were 50 women that would have just absolutely smoked me there instead of just two.
Yeah, I mean, last year the men's average, or the men's time was 8:37, 9:14. So let's see. Yeah, it's pretty quick. Oh, that's right. He didn't finish. So yeah, last year the winner from 26 went 40 minutes faster than last year and didn't. Sorry, 2026. Or 2025, the winner went 40 minutes faster, but didn't win.
Man, that was a sprint finish for, like, second and third, huh?
Mm-hmm. And then this year...
Wait, how'd the guy with the electronic chain lube system do?
I don't remember his name.
You can keep talking about that factor with the electronic chain lube faction. Andrew Lesperance.
It took him 10 hours and 11 minutes, so he was 56 minutes off the winning time, because I don't want to figure out this.
All right.
No, 57 minutes. So think about how much bigger the gap would have been if he hadn't looped his chain. What?
All right.
Also, I'm going to have to take a quick dig on something, because it's unnecessary, but I just have to. Silka podcast.
You know, Marginal Gains or something?
Marginal Gains podcast. Where we make a big deal out of the little things, because the little things can make a big difference.
Okay.
And for years, they've been shitting on the SRAM 10-tooth cog. while being sponsored by Shimano.
All right.
Ignoring that Shimano was running a 10-tooth cog in their 1x setup, and 100% mum is the word on the Shimano 9-tooth stuff. So, it's a reminder to everyone out there, gotta look at the money, and we ain't got none, so we can say whatever the fuck we want.
Can I bitch for a second about how much I hate microspline? Because, like, the last three cogs on, you have to put those on so fucking exactly and hold them in place while you're tightening the lock ring. And if something shifts, you can fuck everything up so bad.
Yeah, how many stripped out lock rings have you had? Because I've probably sold at least 20, if not 30 lock rings for those things.
I mean, I put one on while I was working last
week. Just line up the dots.
I had the dots lined up.
Well,
and the wheel literally just like shifted a little bit.
Can't do that. Can't do that.
It just...
You gotta have...
And one of them...
One of the treads has to be against a hard surface. The other tread has to be in your gut.
It was.
With the brake
rotor.
That's
exactly how it was.
With the brake rotor on your thighs.
I didn't have the brake rotor on my thighs. That's what it was.
And then look at the size of my fingers. So I'm trying to hold like the very tips of a 10-tooth cog down while using my fingernail under the edge of the lock ring to get it started. And then I tighten it up just a little bit. And then I spin the cassette and make sure all the cogs are running straight. And then I tighten it up the rest of the way. Yeah, I love them.
Fuck, I hate those things.
Don't forget that little paper thin plastic washer to keep the cassette from creaking off the back either.
Yeah, well, I mean, those things suck so much.
We just need to come up with a better system. I don't know what the system is, but...
XD?
I think just derailleurs. Derailleurs and giant cassettes and all that stuff. Like, you basically can't run a modern derailleur on a 27.5-inch bike because it's 1 inch off the ground, and it's going to get absolutely shrecked by any rock. It's really ridiculous. And I'll dig on transmission. Okay, the derailleur's really strong, but now your cage just gets mangled, and you replace it every other... I don't know. And it's not SRAM's fault. It's just, I think the derailleur system that we have, they're trying to make improvements to it. I get it. It's great. But like, when some shit hits a rock, something's going to give. And in this case, it's the cage instead of the hanger. So, I don't know. I think with all the power of e-bikes and shit hanging down low and the huge gear ratios that we want, like, it's time for something different. I don't know what
front
it is.
Front derailleurs?
Yeah, maybe front derailleurs need to come back. I don't know. No, front derailleurs are fucking terrible. Yeah, the closest we ever got was Shimano's last generation, that 11 speed. It had like that side swing front derailleur. That motherfucker could shift a chain. That was the best mountain front derailleur that's ever been produced.
Better than DI2?
Great question. I guess probably similar to DI2.
I mean, but we don't want front derailleurs.
No.
Because suspension has gotten better because we're not designing to have a front derailleur there.
Oh, I agree. It's I'm just complaining. I don't have a solution. That's all.
I do.
What's your solution?
Hold on to your labia. Well, there's two options. One, remember the patent patrol where SRAM had a patent for chain rings that shifted themselves?
Vaguely.
Do you, Kenny?
No.
It was a derailleurless 2x.
So it was, what was that old... The crank that did
no
Hammerschmidt.
No.
Hammerschmidt.
Shut your mouth, because that was going to be my second option. Let's see.
But maybe we just need to have that bike that I don't know, college engineer kid was working on, where it used kind of a traditional derailleur, but the derailleur was like nested inside of like between the seat stay and chain stay kind of thing.
But yeah, it was like an old X9 derailleur that he modified.
Yeah.
That was fucking cool.
But yeah, I mean, we ride mountain bikes in really hard places, and the shit just hangs off of there, and it's going to get exploded.
I don't know. I didn't have a problem with, you know, like, mechanical XX1.
But the other option is Hammerschmidt.
Hammerschmidt.
If there was a...
I mean, I think we've talked about it before with an e-bike. Like, if you had a...
We're going to see some, like, gearbox e-bikes. Someone's going to figure out a pretty
gearbox,
good way to do it.
Like, with e-bikes, it would be a gearbox with a fixed rear cog.
Yes. I truly think that is the answer. I really, really, really...
Because I think for e-bikes, that makes sense. Because even with my... I don't know. I'm not that great at riding bikes anymore. But, like, trying to ratchet pedal an e-bike with, like, the ratcheting motor and the ratcheting of the hub. You have to, like, give it a really good back pedal to get to the next, like, click.
Well, I'm not positive that putting in gearboxes and pinions and all that other shit is going to necessarily improve that, but I'm just thinking more durability.
You're taking away one of the things that's giving you some of that, like, back pedal travel.
Yeah, I guess true, but I think there's a lot of other stuff you're introducing into that system that will maybe have some type of backlash, but maybe could be wrong.
Yeah, well, I'm not an engineer. I'm just leaving that up to the engineers to figure it the fuck out.
But I think fixed cog rear wheels. I think
maybe
that's
gearbox
a thing.
Bikes in general are just the way of the future.
I think it just doesn't. We've been over it before. For purely human pedaling stuff, that extra hit on efficiency just makes it undoable. I think it's just not ever going to actually work. Chains are just too efficient. The whole system is just too fragile. That's my only problem. But on an e-bike, I think all that stuff goes out the window. And if you lose 5 or 10% efficiency, who cares?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think anyone cares if the durability goes up, which
That's
is
correct.
What we're talking about.
Yeah. You're talking about on an analog bike, people won't care because the durability.
No.
Okay.
On an e-bike,
yes.
The durability goes up, people won't care.
100%.
On an analog bike, if Nino's not racing it, then people don't want it.
And could you imagine, though, and we've said this a million times, unfortunately, a lot of the people buying e-bikes these days, they're not lifelong mountain bikers. They don't know how to light pedal when they shift. Or even if you do light pedal on a modern bike, it's still putting out 200 watts and you don't realize it. And you just end up destroying chains and cassettes and they come in, they're all pissed off. People have been coming into the bike shop since the beginning of time on analog bikes, holding a derailleur in one hand and a chain in the other and be like, I don't know what happened. I was just riding along, right? Like, that's happened forever and it will continue to happen. I would just like to see it happen less.
I definitely did that with my, I went out to Shelby Forest on my second mountain bike ride, I think.
That sounds terrible.
And I was just like fucking bushwhacking on my mountain bike and just got a bunch of shit wrapped around the cassette and derailleur and it just ripped it off.
It's not even fun to like hike at Shelby Forest, let alone ride a mountain bike.
Well, I was like down by the river, so it was flat, but it was fucking like just like you could get malaria in there. It was so gross, like swampy.
Yeah, I don't really miss that place at all. Not Shelby Forest in particular, but kind of like the Mid-South. I don't miss the terrain and stuff. I miss the people. Miss the food. Had a lot of good times there. But man, I don't miss the terrain. Don't miss the humidity. Don't miss all the private property. Don't miss any of that shit.
Yeah, I think that's one of the amazing things when you like start going out west. All of a sudden, there's just public land. And fucking lots of.
Yeah, like what I did this last weekend. It was fucking badass. I didn't see pretty much a single other person. I just parked my damn shit wherever I wanted and rode my damn dirt bike all over the place. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you live not in the West, someplace that doesn't have a lot of public land and on the internet bitching about political policies that might endanger public land, you should pay attention to that because public land is amazing.
But don't come out here. Don't come out here. It's not for you. It's not for you.
Nope. Come to Salida, rent a bike, do a shuttle.
Yeah, come to Leadville and river. Break something and bring your bike in. We'll fix it. Leadville, BC Casa. You know, we're doing this, and the guy that's doing it is like a long time. I've talked about it. Sean, my coworker there. He's done a bunch of. He's ridden bikes. Probably he's like Kenny. He's ridden bikes like forever. Longer than I have. Matt, you're the same way. You've ridden bikes for forever.
I was going to say, I don't think I've ridden bikes any longer than anybody else my age.
You've ridden sit-down bikes long.
Yeah, I started riding.
But you did, like, BMX stuff. I guess you're not calling that sit-down?
No, because, there for the longest time, I made the joke, I didn't start riding real bikes, but then I realized that it was BMX, which is, totally legitimate. But, the world of BMX and the world of mountain bikes, so much.
Sure.
So, I just don't consider, yes, the bike handling, the spatial awareness, the body balance, blah, 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 all that crap. Yes, I benefit from my youth BMX days. But, you had a 45-second race on a manicured surface that did not change, that was only a quarter of a mile long. It's pretty cut and dry simple, right? So, mountain biking, there's decision-making and gears, and there's two brakes on the bike, and there's...
Also, from, a mechanical standpoint, this is meant to be... It's a little bit of a dig on BMX people. I don't think we have a whole lot of people that listen to the show that are diehard BMX people.
No, you can't fix a mountain bike with a hammer.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of people that just literally hammer, physically hammer on BMX bikes. And I remember one time way early on in my bicycle mechanicking career, some kid came in with a BMX bike and like the crank was just fucking horrible. Like he had all the wrong spacers on the inside and all this shit. And it was in for something mildly related to that. And I got that crank spinning like perfect preload. It was like spinning nice and free. It was great. And I gave him the bike back and he's like, "You messed up my cranks." And I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about, dude? Your shit was shrecked. It was absolutely jacked up." He's like, "Oh, well, now like my pedals spin and I can't like do shit in the air." He was like upset. That was really funny.
Yeah, so I mean, I started riding road bikes in 2006 and mountain bikes in 2000. And I don't know, like Sean's been, he's talked about, I don't know, fucking young. He's like a kid. He's 30. So he's like, you know, might as well be 18. But, I mean, he's been riding downhill bikes for fucking forever. And then, like, normal mountain bikes in between that. And, yeah, like, he's doing suspension service there now and really good. And, you know, like, just the fact that somewhere, you know, like, now in Colorado, we can do suspension service right there in-house in the middle of Colorado instead of, like, sending it. Like, that's really good. So, like, if you come through Leadville and...
Do you want to ask them if they need a shock dyno?
They have a shock dyno.
Excellent.
Yeah. You got a shock dyno?
We just have a shock dyno. We have a shock dyno that we don't need.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it takes a little longer because, I mean, the thing is with like full shock, fork and shocks, the kits are something that a small shop can't just have every single one in stock. So like the most popular ones are there. But, you know, if you've got something that's a generation or two old.
Or brand new, maybe.
Or brand new, you know, maybe it's going to take a week to get the proper kit in. But other than that, like, it's right there. Just do it in-house, and that's freaking awesome. It's just one of those things that a lot of small shops don't do. Just because, like, specialized tool Unitask might be a tool that only works on, like, one or two generations of shock for one brand that you have to have to do.
For, let's call it, 3 years of one model, of one brand's model. So, like, great example would be the ISO strut shock or whatever it's called on the Trek Super Cow. I think it's something like, I think wholesale is like, or retail would be like $75 or $80 to buy the parts to do that the first time. And to do the RockShox version and to do the Fox version, I think it requires like $1,400 or $1,500 in tooling at retail to do the first one.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not something that a lot of small shops can offer. Yeah, you know, I know Kenny's shop has that shit, but they're a huge
not anymore
shop.
Right?
No, I mean, we still have it. We did it for like a year or two. We did the in-house thing, but we've talked about it on the show. It was cool to be able to do it, but here's the issue that we ran in is unfortunately one or two people end up holding that knowledge, and if they leave, you're in trouble. So that's one issue. But the other thing is it's all well and good when you are rebuilding stuff that doesn't have major problems, but there are so many ways that can fail that if you don't know, if you don't have the super duper in-depth experience and have seen every generation and worked on every single generation kind of as they came out, and you remember all the shit that you found in those generations and how they fail, like, oh yeah, and I'm completely making shit up here. Like, yeah, the little internal adjuster thing on a Fox CTD, it tends to shear off and it causes XYZ thing. But if you don't know all this stuff and all you're doing is putting in new seals and recharging nitrogen and doing, you can do all the stuff correctly to the book. But if you don't know that some little rod in there is going to be bent, or some little part of some stanchion on the inside likes to get scratched and then it's just going to fail again, then you just don't know those things. You don't know what you don't know. And that's what we ran into is I would say 8 out of 10 of the suspension rebuilds we did came out okay. But usually it's kind of like that Shimano brake. Unless you're doing preventative maintenance, which most people are not when you're doing a full rebuild. Most people might do wiper seals, but unless they have a damper problem, they're not going to do preventative 200-hour maintenance or whatever. They're going to bring it in because my lockout lever doesn't work anymore, or it gargles, or has some other huge issue. It's like one of those Shimano brakes failing at the master cylinder. You could do a perfect bleed on it, but it's just going to fail again because there's something that's actually broken, right? And that's a little bit oversimplification, but that's what we ran into.
No, it's not, though, because what you're saying, though, is like it's very easy. Like, oh, man, this... the whole, for argument's sake, like lockout lever, like if it had a remote lockout on the left or a dropper and like a shifter on the right and everything's covered in sauce, you're like, yeah, there's no reason to try to bleed. But we've seen that so many times, we know better.
Yeah, we do. We do, exactly. We know better. Instead of, and I don't even tell people at that point,
though, where like this Fox shock doesn't lock out because the like damper side is air. And that same model, same shock, 2 days later, it could not lock out because, like you said, the lever has, like, the, maybe it's not even sheared. Maybe it's just, like, slightly deformed under, like, if you take a bunch of hits locked out on this, maybe it does something weird to the shim stack.
Exactly.
Or something. And, like, the person that knows, like, grabs one of those shims and looks at it and is like, oh, yep, this shim's bad because they wrote it locked out too much on descents. So
100%. But the problem is you can have every correct tool that you spent thousands of dollars on. You've got the nitrogen charge set up. You've got the shock dyno. You follow all the rebuild stuff to the T. You're setting that IFP depth like absolutely perfectly using the right oils. You can do everything correctly, rebuild that shock, and it might even work for a little bit. And then the thing comes back 2 weeks later and it's got the same problem. And now you've got a pissed off customer and you've got to not only redo it, but you don't just want to blindly redo it because there's probably an underlying reason why it had that problem to begin with. So the issue we had is maybe one times out of 10 or two times out of 10, that thing would come back. And now we've got to figure out what's it. And the amount of time you got to sink into that for us was just not worth it. And that's the knowledge that is held by an elite suspension rebuild place, like maybe a Suspension Syndicate or, you know, there's, I think, a few in Colorado. There's plenty of really good places out there in the world that can do this stuff. But I mean, I'm going to say, I'm making up a number here a little bit, but I'll bet you I'm not far off. There's probably really only 10 people in the world who really have a grasp on this stuff and have rebuilt the whole gambit of stuff. You know, they do Olins, they do RockShox, they do Fox, they do DVO.
Fucking lefties.
All the stuff. There's not many people that really have that. So anyway, that's why we got out of it, because that juice was just not worth the squeeze. It was fun to do it for a little bit, and having that in-house ability was cool, but man, not only does one person hold that knowledge, but if that one person is gone, they're out sick, they're on vacation, whatever it is, that can bottleneck everything really quickly. So even someone our size, it was not quite worth it to do in-house suspension service. I'm glad we tried it, but yeah, not for us. And I don't know how we got on that tangent exactly. You were talking about your local shop, your guy doing it. So, I mean, yeah, props on him. Yeah. I think that's cool. But it's not easy.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone, he's just been doing it for so long. He's also been a machinist for a long time. And from what I've working with him a few days, like, can do problem solving really well. So, yeah, I'm not saying it would, you know, if that kind of shit happened where, like, something was missed in the first service and came back to, I'm not saying that wouldn't happen, but it.
And by the way, unfortunately, that has to happen. The only way you're going to learn.
Yeah,
is if that happens, and then you go investigate, and it sounds like he's the kind of person that is good at that stuff and problem solving, but it's no fun to, so even that money and time that you save by doing it in-house that first time, you've now lost all of it when you redo it the second time for free, or maybe a third time.
Yeah, that's true.
On a slightly unrelated note, just a heads up for people in listener land, I think I talked about it on a show or two ago, but we are looking to hire people. So if you yourself or maybe somebody that you know maybe wants to move to Salt Lake City or something similar, we've got a 6-location shop. And we're looking for particularly service techs all the way out through service manager.
You could have Kenny's.
Not true. Not true. There's only one of me.
Thank God.
Yeah. It would be bad. If there was another person like me, it wouldn't be good for the world.
I don't know. I always say, like, I just want, like, a clone of myself to be friends with.
Y'all would murder each
other.
Man.
What?
Nothing. I'm being a dickhead for no reason.
All right.
It's not important.
Okay.
You were talking about Sean.
If you're interested, Hangar 15 Bicycles, and you can figure out how to get in contact with Hangar 15. There's applications. That's a test or a little bit, right? Like if you can't figure out how to apply at Hangar 15 Bicycles or somehow contact me, and you can right now, if you want to, in listener land, you can pull up our ad in Bicycle Retailer. I just put it in this morning.
Yeah,
so you can even look it up over there right now. And
you have to be able to find Kenny.
Yep.
And apply for a job at Hangar 15. without him telling you the specifics of that.
But my email is in the bicycle retailer ad. You can figure it out.
I like how people post Colorado jobs on there without a pay rate.
Is that illegal?
Even though it's a law in Colorado.
Interesting.
Yeah, the law in Colorado is if it's a Colorado job, you have to post your pay rate. I mean, even if you do it bullshit, like you could get paid minimum wage through $50 an hour. Like you
gotta
put that
in. This one right
here,
I'm seeing one in Colorado and it has a pay rate. And yeah, that's the only one I'm seeing.
I was looking at the very first one.
Oh. Yeah, maybe that's different because it's not technically, it's called an industry position. I don't know why they posted that.
It's a job in Colorado.
Yeah, it's a job in Aspen, Colorado too. And if you've ever been to Aspen, is like the most fucking terrible, sorry to all the rich people out there, but it's a fucking, like, just a bougie rich person fucking hellhole of a city. It's so terrible. I've been there once and I hope I never even have to like drive through Aspen.
The interesting thing to me about places like Aspen is, man, how do you get people that are going to consistently work normal jobs there? Because where the fuck are they going to live?
They live a long way. Like for Vail, I don't know, an hour.
Oh my God. Snowmass Village, pay rate $23.50 an hour.
Yeah, pretty much, if you're looking for jobs in Colorado, if there's a job that's in a town that has where the town is basically built around this, like, you know, if they say, like, you know, you can ski in your condo or from your condo, you can get on your skis and fucking get on a fucking ski lift, it's gonna cost you double what it costs you to live anywhere else in Colorado, not just in the United States, like in Colorado. It's really fucking expensive. I mean, I know, like, people that work in Vail, some of them live in Leadville, which is like an hour away, and you have to go over a mountain path. And like, Leadville is like the bedroom town for Vail, or a bedroom town for Vail. It is a long fucking way to get there, and it's not an easy drive to get there. And yeah, so like, that's just a little caveat for anyone looking to move to Colorado in the bike industry. If you're looking at industry jobs, ski towns, like legitimate ski towns, like Salida, there's a ski resort that's a half an hour away from Salida, and they claim Salida is like like anyone who works there lives in Salida for the most part, or Buena Vista. And yeah, like it's not like a, you know, you rent a condo in Salida and you from your condo. No, you gotta like drive half an hour. It's a little different than like Vail or Asp Snowmass or Breckenridge, any of those places. If you're making a good bike mechanic salary, you're not gonna fucking, unless you're living with four or five other, or in housing that's paid for by the owner of the shop. Yeah, sorry, that was like a big tangent. What other news? We've gotten on like a huge tangent.
Okay, so we talked about BMX in this tangent. Huffy has the Primus, an Olympic level BMX frame. So they're releasing a new BMX bike, which is pretty cool.
Is it carbon?
Doesn't look like it.
I couldn't really tell from the titanium.
No, it's aluminum. But it has all the cool stuff, like through axles in the rear. It's got,
was it having the,
well, it doesn't ship with a fork, so.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. I like it. It's cool. It's a,
that's a carbon fork.
Well, that's a box fork. Huffy doesn't make that. It'd be I think they're 20 in the front, and you can do a multitude of stuff in the rear for BMX, but it's got through axles with chain tension, built in chain tensioners. I mean, it's just a real bike, so it's pretty cool. One of the things I'm going to do this year is go to the BMX track, wherever. I don't know, it just seems like there's some cool stuff.
Well, I think once BMX does in-headset cable routing, I think that's when I'm going to retire.
Actually, this has what, it's a patented, it shows it on their website a little bit better. It looks like they made it internally routed on the down tube, like, and I said that correctly, on the down tube. So there's, you
it's
have
like a sleeve.
Yeah, it's like a sleeve that bolts onto the down tube. Sliders move the brake. As cool as they're talking about this, they're really not showing that fucking bottom bracket or bottom of the down tube cable routing. They just got a picture of some dude like pushing the thing up. I don't know. I don't care. Drill holes and shit. Go nuts. Be an adult. Ruin your warranty.
Speaking of crazy shit.
Well, hold on. I got a crazy one too, and it's quickie. Zonda Crypto is no longer part of the Canyon SRAM sponsor team because sounds like a bunch of people at Zonda Crypto are going to jail. So
I saw the headline and it said something about a breach of contract and I didn't click on it.
Well, yeah, they breached their contract by doing crimes.
Kenny, have you seen the Antidote AS05 downhill bike?
Yeah, I have.
That looks like, it straight up looks like an e-moto. Like, they tried to make it look like an it looks like a surf.
Let's see. Antidote AS05. Let's take...
That's a high pivot, auto gearbox, prototype downhill bike.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, doesn't that look straight up? Like, it's like they put some fairings in the front triangle to make it look like...
Yeah, what I don't understand is it looks quite weird, but okay and good looking, in my opinion, when you see the tubes. And then when they put... Why put the plastic shit on the side? It makes it look cheesy as fuck. It looks horrible.
It makes it look like an emote.
It looks terrible. But it might be cool. I don't really know. I just think it's cool. I'd rather see the stuff. Like, show me the tube. Like, I'm not scared of tubes. Like, why do you need to put a plastic cover over my fucking valve cover on a modern car? It's not that I'm, like, scared to see an aluminum valve cover. The valve cover's not going to hurt you. If you see a coil pack, it's not going to hurt you. Just take that plastic shit off and throw it away.
It's a gearbox bike, but it's got a rear derailleur.
Hmm?
I'm just saying what's in front of me. It says it's a gearbox bike, but there is definitely a rear derailleur on the bike.
I do like that the first comment on Pink Bike is, the antidote to what? My eyeballs? So that's good. I do want to say one of my favorite DH bikes, I know nothing about it other than it was wonky and cool. And I remember when I was a teenager, looking at it in mountain bike magazines, that Honda DH bike that had the moto swing arm thing on it. That thing was just so fucking the Honda DH bike. We've maybe talked about it once or twice on the show, but it was just crazy. It had basically a CR250 aluminum frame.
Yeah, I mean, that thing's dope.
What's up with that saddle on the Honda website that I'm looking at? It's got like a saddle with like a grab handle on the front of it.
Yeah, you got to remember, this was 2004. We did weird shit. But by the way, look at this thing. Freaking, it's got a carbon fiber cover on a gearbox. And it's got our single, I think it's got our fixed cog situation that we were talking about for our e-bikes.
Anything with a gearbox needs to have a fixed cog on it. God,
that motherfucker has a Showa fork on it. That is so dumb. But I'm all for some wacky bikes.
I like how this is on the Global Honda website. Like, what I'm looking at is on the Global Honda website. It's an article from February 3rd of 2003.
That is awesome.
And it's just still there.
But for those that want to look at what we're looking at, the Honda RN01.
Yep.
So it's cool. The new Specialized is insane, and it gives me vibes. The one we just looked at, also a crazy bike, but I'm here for it. I'm here for cool, wacky stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I can appreciate, like, even though I don't ride downhill bikes, I've literally never ridden a downhill bike other than maybe, like, I don't know, test riding one in the parking lot to, like, that I'd worked on to make sure the shifting works, sort of, because they're all just hammered, right? But, I mean, I can appreciate it because I feel like the suspension tech starts with downhill stuff because they don't have to worry that much about weight. Like, that's where it matters the least in bikes, is in downhill.
Also, in some ways, I think where it matters, the weight matters the least, the suspension most.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, like, they're trying to maximize suspension. And if it weighs a little more, it's fine. And so, like, I can really appreciate, like, the technology that goes into downhill. Because eventually, you know, if it catches on in downhill bikes, eventually some version of that will work its way into enduro bikes. And then it might work its way in trail bikes. And then possibly... So, yeah, like, I really like weird downhill bike tech. Because it just kind of, like, throws a little bit of the weight weenies, not even weight weenie, but just the weight question out of the equation. What can we do to make this perform the best? And I like that. I haven't really talked about that much. I've been recording for a hot minute.
Cheating in the, what race was this? So Trans Balkan race disqualified someone mid-race.
All right.
Outside support not allowed. They'd received multiple reports that this person was not just getting trail magic, but more. And they struck out.
What is the Trans-Balkan race?
It's a big bikepacking race.
Oh, okay, okay.
And it's totally unsupported. And straight up, he was like winning the race and just like hitting this big sprinter van and getting like full-blown restock, refuel, cleaned up.
Yeah, works. That can make a big difference in bikepacking because you're just not caring.
That's also such a bummer to hear if that is true, because races like that are so, what's the way I can put it? Like, the term like gentleman comes to mind, right? But it's such a...
well, there's like eight people that give a shit. So right, why would like you bother just, cheating?
Yeah. And it's like, man, that goes so against the ethos of what something like that is. That's just so shit.
Like,
that's
I want to so know... Shitty. I want to see someone actually do like a fully supported and out there, like say, declare ahead of time, I'm going supported Tour Divide. And I don't know, maybe someone's done it. I know people do that as like recreation, but as just a race, like someone who's relatively fast and trained for it, say like, I'm going to do a fully supported divide, see how fast I can do it, fully carrying what I need for the next 3 or 4 hours, resupplying at a van and then continuing on, you know, at that pace. I think they'll see, you know, I wouldn't call it whatever, like, you know, you're not going to count it at Tour Divide unsupported time, but just what could someone do?
Probably go really fast.
Yeah. I think that'd be really fun to watch. Do you don't have any listener questions before we do patrons and wrap it up?
There is one thing that I want to talk about real quick. I am very slow to admit that I am. How do I put this? I'm trying to think of the way to word what I'm trying to say. Some people are tool snobs in the sense that something is really expensive, so they want it. And I'm becoming a really big fan of highly functional tools that work for exactly what I need. And I don't know if I've talked about it on the show before or not, but I've built what I've deemed or nicknamed the SSB. Never say never, but I don't really have any plans to build a full-blown, full-size, this-can-do-everything-you-need-to-a-bicycle toolbox. David Evans, worked with him in Memphis. He's probably one of the only people that's ever built a toolbox that can actually do everything, and it took a rifle case to do it. Like, he has a rifle case with multiple layers in it. That's how you can do everything. Because when you build a toolbox, like a Pelican normal, like, you know, let's call it 20 by 12 by 10 toolbox, that can only work on some things. Can't do everything. And those only work for pro, like pro racing and stuff, because they know exactly what they're working on. They're going to be working on transmission. They're going to be working on SRAM brakes. They know they're working with Roval cockpit. Or let's go with Scott. They're going to be working with Scott bikes, so they know they need a full complement of torques, because heaven forbid we use a hex if we're Scott. We need to change these Schwalbe tires, and I don't know what Scott rides, but like, we need to change these Maxxis tires on these Synchros wheels, and we're not using any inserts, and like, all the team is riding this wheel, so I only need this rim tape. There's all these little things.
I only need this one spoke wrench.
Yeah, I only need a spoke wrench. I only, you know, it narrows your world down a lot. Like, I guarantee you that they're not whipping that toolbox open and working on a Margaritaville trike with a rear drum brake that doesn't want to work. Because that's what I did today. I worked on a Margaritaville drum brake. And you know how well it worked when I was done? It didn't. Because
better than when you...
No.
Not even better?
When it came in, it worked a little bit. When it left, that fucker didn't work at all.
When it came in, you could pull the brake as hard as you wanted. When I say as hard as you wanted, like, put the lever in the center of your palm and put, like, grip it to get a thumb on the grip, and I could still turn the wheel by hand. And when it was all said and done, it was kind of difficult to turn the wheel by hand doing that same squeeze. Like, that bitch just ain't gonna work. But my shop supplement box is my hand tools. So I have a 1.5 through 8 millimeter hex wrench, L ball end. I have no need for a 10. There's 10s at the shop, and 10s are used very infrequently, so I left that out. I have T8, T10, T25, and T30 Torx, and then I have 2 through 6 millimeter Torx. All of those are quarter inch drive. and I have three different ways of turning those quarter-inch drive attachments. A Craftsman inline cordless screwdriver, a 4-inch ratchet, or probably a 3-inch ratchet, sorry, and a palm ratchet. Like, that's all that is in that box. But I've become really accustomed to, and the stuff that I have isn't really, none of it is fancy. I mean, it's Bondus L wrenches, Neko, I think, Neko, N-E-I-K-O. They make a wonderful hex and Torx. I've been using them at home since 2020, and I've had no issues with them. They work great. And then my little 3-inch ratchet is some garbage from Amazon. It's a Craftsman, like, $30 inline wrench. It's a $8 palm driver, like, but it all works really well for what I need it to do. And where I'm going is Unior. I really never looked at their stuff until recently, and they make some really good stuff.
I really like their chain checker.
Well, I'm going to order three of their tools probably tomorrow. I'm going to get the 2-in-1 brace disc brake tool. So this is a pad spreader and a rotator in one.
Ooh, I like that.
They have a flare nut wrench, so a crow's foot in 7 and 8 millimeters for Shimano and SRAM, respectively. But it's long. Because my biggest complaint with the new Motive or, like, Level Stealth or anything like that, the stealth brakes from SRAM, it's really hard to torque those fittings at the bar. You just start crashing into the bar with the head of your wrench or with the head of the crow's foot or whatever. Especially if someone has narrowed their bars a little. Or you have, like, an SQ Labs or I can't even think of it, a one-up bar, any of those bars with, like, extra shape, things get weird, really. And they make a rotor wear indicator. I reached out to the guy from Abbey, I don't remember his name now, asking him to make this tool, and he told me, no, it can't be done, and I need to use micrometers like a real mechanic. And guess what? Unior makes it. And, you know, the thing that
it's $15.
It's $14.99. And the thing that I'm really going for,
that's the reason why Abby wouldn't make it, is because they couldn't charge $50.
Yeah, like, the thing is, though, this is so go no go that it, like, I don't give a shit if your rotor, like, if it almost goes in there, it needs to be replaced. If it doesn't even try to go in there, it doesn't need to be replaced. No one comes to me and says, hey, I need rotors. People always come in and they say, hey, I need brake pads. And if it goes in there, guess what? It's bad. It's that simple. So,
yeah,
I don't
order
know.
One for me too. Actually, I think they're at the shop.
That's where I saw this. Was at the shop.
No, I don't check bikes in that much. So,
And
I take my own calipers with me, so I have an even rotor checking tool.
But, yeah, that's all the new shit. Are we gonna just wrap this up?
Let's wrap this up.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been recording for 2 hours.
It's been 7 days. We've recorded so long that we've recorded both shows for the next 2 weeks.
All right. Our patron, starting at 10 or more. We have John, Kurt, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taperbore Pro, My Pal Dal, Male Circumcision Should Not Be Compared to F.
Do you know what it is? Female Genital Mutilation. Mike Jones!
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Richard Rock.
Wait, is that someone's real name?
No.
Okay.
Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Chipset Coffee, We Caffeinate Colorado.
P.O. Box 82, Howard, Colorado. Let me try it.
Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Moose Knuckle Taproom, the home of open doors and heavy, I don't know, .. Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
Ooh, she nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Balls, what? It's the word ball 10 times.
So maybe it's a 10 ball.
Okay. Professor XXX at $11.11 per month, Haywood Jablomi, Patamillan Disco Ball at $14 Australia, and at $20 a month, Matt and Andrea's Questionable Relations, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, and at $26.06 per month, brought the kids to Hangar 15 today. Not intentional. Just wore the wrong socks.
Oh, God. Wait. Oh, no.
What?
Yeah.
Harley at 30. Andrea knows about shit at 31. And six-pack outdoors, purveyors of top-shelf shenanigans and cycling events.
So you should have clicked on that last one, or the first one.
Sorry, our Patreon is not showing us. Oh yeah, that other one was Moose Knuckle Tap Room, the home of open doors and heavy pours.
Ugh.
Yeah, patrons are interesting this month. All right, you guys got anything?
I have one fun one. The heavy pours got it. Customer came in and they were looking for like something ridiculous. It was like a matchmaker bolt or something.
Which you have 500 of.
And he came in and like Jason, the owner, knew him by name and they bullshitted and caught up. And then he's like, yeah, yeah, let me see if this is like the right one. And Jason's like, yeah, go check it out. But he said it in a way of like, dude, I own the bike shop and it's a matchmaker bolt. Like, it's the right fucking one. Right. Anyways, comes back in, what do I owe you for this? And I was literally installing that micro spline cassette. So I was like, I don't know, just buy your next tire here. Don't worry about it. He's like, no, let me give you something. I was like, no, really, it's not a big deal. And I really wanted to say, if I drop this cassette, it's going to take me like 3 hours to get it back on. And then he's like, well, I'll buy a tire and bring some beer. And I was like, yeah, we don't do that here. And he's like, oh, Jason put a kibosh on y'all having fun. And I looked up at him and I was like, no, if I drink beer, I have to find a new place to live. And then one of the...
Just be like, no, everyone here is an alcoholic and we don't drink anymore.
And another guy pipes up and he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure if I was still drinking, well, I'd be dead, so I wouldn't be drinking anymore. So 2026, normalize making white dudes uncomfortable about the fact that some people don't drink.
All right. Well,
shut her down.
Thank you all for listening. And good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.